Welcome to the Healthcare Advocacy Podcast. On this podcast, you'll hear stories to encourage, inspire, and empower you to be the best healthcare advocate that you can be for yourself or for a loved one. The information provided in this podcast is not to be used for any medical advice. This is for information only and to support you in your journey. Please consult with your physician and medical team. In fact, share your favorite episode with your team and ask questions from that.
Have you ever felt that you wanted to do something bigger for your profession? Well, today we're going to hear from somebody who has done just that, not only for the profession of speech pathology, but for healthcare in general. Welcome to the Healthcare Advocacy Podcast. Today we're going to be talking with Jenny Bale Stencil. She's a speech language pathologist, and she is the owner and administrator of Spark Home Healthcare. Welcome, Jenny.
Thank you.
Yeah, so today we'll talk a little bit about who you are and what you do and your take on the whole healthcare industry and how patients can be better advocates for themselves, and specifically what you have started to really help patients and families get the quality healthcare that they want and deserve. So why don't you start by telling us a little bit about you?
Yeah, great. So I am a speech language pathologist. As you said, I've been a speech pathologist for 12 years. And I'm also one of three owners of Spark Home Health, and I'm the administrator at Spark Home Health as well. So about 6 years ago, after I had my daughter, I started just independent contracting and working for myself in early intervention, and honestly got a little bit lonely and just felt like I missed having a team around me. I started to hire some therapists to work with me just in early intervention. And then came together with one of my mentors to talk about how we could grow into something that has more of an impact in the community. And at that time, we decided to start Spark Home Health, and we became Medicare, Medicaid certified, ACHC credentialed home health agency. And that was in 2017, November of 2017, and we started hiring therapists to work with us in 2018. So, and here we are, not even 2 years yet.
Yeah, that's quite a journey, because, you know, you and I have had a relationship for a while now. I began with a company that you previously worked for back in 2011, and even though we didn't really work together, I still knew you as, you know, a really great therapist and somebody that everybody went to for more information. So that's, you know, I know you had such a great background and start as a therapist, and wonderful that you had a bigger vision to grow out your own company, not only to meet your needs, but to be able to provide services to more people. What really was the driver behind that for you to take those steps?
Yeah, I think for me, it was mostly about being able to build a team, and being able to really find, you know, the best quality therapists and people who were like-minded when it came to patient care and running an agency and providing resources to families and keeping the patient at the center of everything that we do, but also recognizing that therapists have challenges and that you're out there kind of on an island, especially in home healthcare. You're, you know, out by yourself, and so really needing to build the connection between therapists so that they feel like they're supported and part of a team, and that they can go to other people for guidance or to find support for the family. So that was really the driver behind it. I think that I've kind of always wanted to start my own business. When I was in school, I thought a lot about being an independent contractor and being an owner. And I mean, administrator is a different role, but like being somebody who's able to cultivate, I guess, an environment of a company and what I think therapy should look like. So it's nice because I'm in control to an extent of, you know, what our company looks like, how services are provided, how our therapists are supported. And so for me, that's exciting. It's exciting to be able to create something. And I think that was really at the core of wanting to go ahead and do it.
That's wonderful. That's what we need, because parents need choices, therapists need choices, and to be able to provide a unique framework to start from, to really have those solid goals, like you said, of patient-centered and balance the therapist's needs at the same time. So now I am an employee for you, so I can attest that you guys are doing a great job of meeting your core, you know, mission. Truly, I do feel like you guys are set, you would set out with these core principles, and you're doing a really good job, at least from an employee standpoint and from the parents that I work with. I hear that feedback. So I know that makes a difference in many people's lives. So I think that, you know, your mission is being fulfilled. That's wonderful.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Yay.
Yay. Good to hear.
Well, I'm sure you probably feel that it is, I don't know. Do you ever wonder, like, are you guys succeeding, or where do you get, how are you looking to grow, or what information are you receiving to know that you are meeting the mission that you set out to for your company?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, I do feel like we're meeting our mission, but I always want to be really cognizant of where we might fall short, so that we're able to continue to grow in a way that still supports that mission. I think the larger you get, the more employees you get, the harder it is to keep in touch with all of those pieces, right? Keep in touch with all the therapists and their needs, keep in touch with all the families and their needs. And I think that we're doing a really good job, but it's also, you know, it's nice to hear that feedback from outside people as well. and, you know, we definitely touch base with our therapists. And as you know, we have a annual review that we do where we really, get feedback from our therapists and look for honest feedback. And we have a little, what is that called? Like a suggestion box that we've put out at meetings. And so we try to make sure that we're meeting everyone's needs. I think for me, what's hard is as a therapist, I'm a fixer, and I want everyone to have everything that they want. And that has been a challenge for me moving into an owner administrator role, where there is a reality of regulations, there's a reality of finances, there's a reality of manpower, and we can't always give everyone what they want. And so that has been really hard for me to, you know, be able to compartmentalize those parts of myself, I guess.
Well, I think good for you to recognize that, but I have a sneaking suspicion that the other members of your administration team might help keep you in check on that. Kind of
for sure. Yeah, I mean, I could not grow this agency without my two partners, there's no way, because I think I have a very idealistic view of how I want the agency to function. I have a very idealistic view of what services I would like to give to families and what resources I would like to give to families. And I think we'll get to a place where we're able to provide more of those things that are, you know, for lack of a better word, that's not even a word, but that don't produce revenue, right? Like non-revenue producing services. Mm-hmm. And I think we'll get to a point, but for me, it's like, I just want to do it all right now. And so having, you know, people exactly to keep me in check and to say, hey, but here's the reality of right now. And especially on the business side of things where, you know, I just don't know.
Right. And that is definitely something that I think is lacking in our education when we're talking from a healthcare provider standpoint, whether you're a physician, a physical therapist, a speech therapist, a dietitian, they are not including any sort of business classes. Did you have anything in your graduate work or?
No. And I, so when I first decided to start hiring therapists, back before I even went for, you know, Spark Home Health, I attended a conference through ASHA. I can't remember the name of it. ASHA Connect, I think they called it at the time, but it's essentially the business side of therapy. And it's a conference that's dedicated just to that. So that was extremely helpful and extremely helpful just to start at least thinking of where do I start and how do I, you know, register a business and how do I do taxes and how do I worry about liability insurance? And we had a presentation from a lawyer that was terrifying about things that could go wrong and how you have to protect yourself. And so there's definitely, for speech therapists anyway, I feel like there's a pretty good community of therapists who are doing business as well. I think where it's lacking, and honestly, it might just be because it's not as interesting to me, but I think the finance side of that is where I think for me as a therapist creating a business, like I have no idea how to do that financial piece of like planning a budget and making sure that we have money to keep the lights on and making sure that all of our employees are being paid. And I think on the billing side and the leadership side and even creating employee manuals, there's a lot of resources for therapists out there, but I think that finance side is a little bit less available.
Interesting. I guess that would be an area to explore more. Maybe you, now that you have all this experience, you could do it in a few years, like build out your own business on finance information. just put it in.
I mean, honestly, when I started working with my partners, I was like very happy to pass that on and not have to worry about that piece anymore.
No, where you're
I think I'm fine doing leadership and education.
Very good. Know your strengths. Okay. So let's think about like maybe from a parent perspective, if you are looking for therapy or have been referred to the therapy department or clinic, why would you want to choose home health, or how do you even get involved in getting a home care provider to come to your house?
Yeah, so I think for Spark Home Health, right, we are certified Medicare and Medicaid as a home health agency. So we are able to provide those services in the home. It's my understanding that independent therapists can go into the home and provide services as well. But when you're an agency, you have to have some certifications. So there is a little bit of a stipulation of, you know, why are you wanting to have home health versus a clinic? So for me, for my daughter, I have one daughter who's six. If she needed speech therapy or PT or OT, I think for us and our family and where we are, it would make more sense in the system for us to go to an outpatient clinic. We have, both my husband and I have access to transportation. She doesn't have any difficulties with transitions. You know, we're all relatively healthy. She isn't immunocompromised. So we are really a better candidate to take her to an outpatient clinic. And honestly, I think she'd probably pay more attention in an outpatient clinic. So for me as a mom, right, like that's what I would choose. Now, if I am talking about me as a mom choosing Spark Home Health as an agency, and we don't have an outpatient clinic, but just, you know, speculating. So let's say my daughter is more immunocompromised, or we don't have access to transportation, or she has difficulty with transitions and being able to transition from one place to another and maintain attention, then we're a good candidate for home health care. And so for me, I would go with Spark because we have a lot of contact with our families outside of the therapist as well. And we try as an office to make sure that we're also reaching out to the families and answering any questions they have, that we are reaching out if they need additional resources. Therapists often are, you know, the therapists are really the front lines for that, right? Like, you know, you're in the home, you see what's going on with that family week to week, you hear stories from the parents, you develop a really good relationship with parents, and they, you know, feel open to tell you things about their lives. And so if they need resources, our therapists will reach out to the office, and our office really tries to follow up with phone calls to the families saying, you know, looking for resources for them. So I think for that reason, I would choose an agency that has that support network behind the therapist as well. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. And I think, you know, looking at maybe just the timeline of you identify something's not quite right with your child, maybe they don't really have a diagnosis, but you know, you're concerned about their development in whatever area it is, how would you go about initiating you know, services for home care? What does that look like, timeline?
So most of our referrals honestly come from the physician's office. So speaking with the physician and finding that maybe your child is needing an evaluation is kind of that first step, but certainly families can reach out to the office directly as well. So timeline would be calling the office to see if we have available therapists, making sure that I give a really full schedule of availability. And then we'll send a therapist out hopefully by the following week. There is a requirement that we provide services within 48 hours or upon when a physician has ordered services. So if we get a call from a parent, on our end, we have to connect with the physician. So, you know, somewhere in between when we connect with the physician and when we're able to get a therapist out to you, then you would have an evaluation by whichever therapy type, and it could be multiple. If it's multiple therapy types, they would come at different times and do their own evaluation. And then we would make recommendations and decide on if services are recommended, what the frequency would be.
Okay.
Which is how often.
Right. And as far as, you know, payment sources or insurance goes, that would be determined before you guys go through the process of getting the orders?
Yes. Yeah. Good question. So when the family initially would call the office, we would have to determine whether we are able to cover services through the insurance plan for the child. And again, that's another thing that I am less involved in and happy to be. But we have great people at the office who are able to look into individual insurance plans. So that would be determined beforehand. And for Spark, if we're not able to work with a family for either insurance or availability, we try really hard to go out into the community and find other providers that can provide those services to that family, so we don't keep a wait list of families. And, you know, there's definitely times where we say, you know, we can't provide those services right now, but we'll keep your contact information. So if in the future we're able to, we'll reach out and make sure, you know, if you're still in need of it. But we go out into the community and find a provider who can take that patient's insurance or, you know, meet that patient's schedule.
Yeah, that's definitely a unique feature about Spark for sure, that if you guys don't have the availability or don't have the, you know, don't take particular insurance, that you do absolutely reach out. I know that from experience, and I think that's wonderful because bottom line, the patients still need care. And families may or may not know really where to go. So wonderful that you feel comfortable referring to a different agency or a different therapy provider that's really looking out for the patient's best interest.
Right. And that's one of our really core values, is that ultimately that child needs services, and that's the most important thing. And if we can't meet that at this time, we're going to help them get what they need because it's the right thing to do. And we've definitely had patients who come on board with us, families reach out, or usually it's families reach out because they've heard about us through other therapists or through just, you know, it's a small community. And so we'll have families reach out and say, I've been on a wait list for 6 months for speech therapy through another agency. Do you have any availability? And, you know, these kiddos, a lot of times are really young, and 6 months is a really long time to not have the services that you need when your brain is changing so rapidly and, you know, your functioning is really impacted day to day. So it's really important to us that we get services to families that
need
it, whether it be through us or not.
Exactly. And like you said, the referrals are usually coming from the physician. So if the physician chooses a particular home care company or clinic, the patient or the family might think that that's the only option for them. And then you get put on a wait list with certain clinics and you feel like you're stuck. So for Spark to take the initiative to say, no, you know, right now we can't help, but here are other options. I think that's a really important model that that everybody should follow. Of course, that maybe you guys don't feel that way, but really people should be doing the right
No. No. Yeah, I know. I mean, I think that's the whole piece of it, right? It's about doing the right thing, and doing the right thing for these families. And I think for me, and I don't know, I feel like our entire staff feels the same, but you know, maybe that is kind of the therapist in me who's seen families, and got to know families and seen people struggling. And you know, I'm just like, it's just not okay to say we can't do it now and we're just going to not give you the resources. And, you know, there's definitely times where we call it to the people that we know and they're not able to provide services either. So it's not like we're placing them at other agencies, although we have several times. But if the people that we know and trust as therapists in the community who don't work for Spark are not able to place the child, then we'll tell the families about other options in the area. And we'll even, sometimes I just do a Google search, here's several clinics or here's three agencies in the area.
Right.
I think you're right. Just letting them know that they can look around too.
And that speaks to an abundance model as opposed to scarcity. And I think from a business side of it, we're always better if we can work in that abundance model, as opposed to trying to hoard everything for yourself. And I mean, that may seem counterintuitive to some people, but I think you guys are on the right track and the correct line of thinking there.
Well, and I don't want to ever think of therapy services as a commodity. At the end of the day, yes, that's how we run our business, right? It's through providing services. But a means to allow us to run financially, but it's not about being a commodity and trying to, I don't know, get the most. It's just about the quality. And there's enough people in need out there, you know, for all of us. We just have to find them and provide those services. But I don't want to ever see it as something that we're selling.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I think your word of mouth referrals and your family to family referrals speak to that people really do get a value from the services provided and from those non-clinical aspects of the care that Spark provides. So again, those unique features of the connections between the office and the families and the therapists who go above and beyond to bring diapers from one family to another, or, you know, formula that one family has extra that they can post, and like all that non-clinical relationship makes a difference in the lives of the families, and that is what is passed on, I think, between.
Yeah.
So let's see, what about the healthcare system in general in the United States today? What do you think is missing, or what could be changed?
So I think a couple of things. I think that it's extremely complicated. In starting to be a home healthcare agency, I'm the administrator, so I'm tasked with compliance. So I've read all the laws about conditions of participation in home health. And I think that I understand why they're there, right? Like, they're to protect the patient and to ensure quality of care. And at first I felt really painted into a corner, and now I'm like, okay, I understand why these rules are written here. But when it comes to just understanding healthcare, or the fact that we can't provide services to Johnny because Johnny has an insurance company who says that we can't be an in-network provider because we're not national and only national providers can be in-network, like, patients don't really have a choice then, right? Like, we can't provide services to Johnny, who's, you know, because of that. Because there's so much complication. And even with Colorado Medicaid, there's definitely several services that we've thought about diving into, but you need to have a different type of, not even license, but you just, to bill for things that you should be able to bill for, you have to have all these different steps in place, and you're really limited to what you can actually bill for. And I think especially as a speech therapist, I felt that a lot when I was not doing home healthcare too, that, you know, there were certain things that they said, well, you can't bill for that at this time, and you can bill for this code at this time. And I just wish it was simpler. So I think that's one thing. And for our families too, navigating the system and trying to get help for your kid is really, really hard. And if you're working with a family who has limited income and higher stress levels and not always lower education, but lower education, like, it's like they don't have the capacity to try to figure it out. And so it's just complicated. So that would be my first kind of area of healthcare that's frustrating for me now that I'm on this side, especially. And the other thing I think is, like everyone's talking about right now, the buzzword of mental health. But I think that mental health, or even just counseling and social work for families who are struggling, I think it goes back to the complexity of healthcare, but like, you can't always get access to counseling and support, like social emotional support in the home, unless there's a mental health diagnosis for, you know, the family, or like for the parent or for the child, which is not usually the case, right? It's more stress related than medical trauma related. And that's something that I've been struggling with for a lot of my families. I want to be able to provide them with some social emotional support, and there's no good way of finding that support for them because there's not an easy way to bill for it.
Yeah, so those are two key things to speak about. I mean, the making access to healthcare simpler or less complicated is humongous. And I sometimes I feel, and maybe this is the wrong point of view, that insurance companies and regulatory agencies make it so difficult so people can't access care so that they can save their money. I mean, like the companies can save the money. Do you feel that, or do you feel like their end goal really is to protect patients?
You know, I think it's more complicated than one or the other, right? I think for regulatory agencies, I think that they are in place to protect patients. Mm-hmm. For sure. I think on the insurance company side, it's really hard to say, but sure, they're a business as well. And it seems more monetarily driven to me as a consumer. I think that if I were to dive into becoming an insurance agent or developing an insurance company instead of a home health agency, I probably would find different.
Sure.
Right? Because in doing this and building a home health agency, I definitely found a lot of rules that I didn't know were there.
Sure.
So there's probably reasons behind some of it, but I think that it also just needs to change, and it just needs to be made more simple.
Right. And I've spoken about this before on the podcast, but, health insurance is the only insurance product that we really are expected to use, or that the insurance companies know is going to be used on a regular basis, whether it's well child visits or your annual checkup or whatever, as opposed to, car insurance, home insurance, life insurance. All those things are set up that you have a lengthy period of time where you're not using the insurance benefits. So I think just the whole setup of the insurance companies, if they, like you said, are businesses and want to have a profit, just the whole model is kind of set up in a way that doesn't put the patient first. I don't know how else they can. I think, like you said, it needs to change, but just the whole idea of health insurance seems like it isn't providing health care. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And especially, again, as a consumer, I feel like, I feel like it's hard to get access. I think if you're in, a really bad accident, and you have a hospital bill of $100,000, then only having to spend, whatever your deductible is for sure helpful. But I think from a day to day, I've maybe sprained my ankle, or I think I have strep throat, or it's just not as easy. And I think especially for therapy, there's a lot of insurance companies that won't pay for speech therapy for children because it's considered developmental. And the only way that they'll pay for speech therapy is if the child were in a car accident or had a stroke, which, is uncommon. And there has to be some sort of skill that already was developed and then an accident took it away. So a lot of those insurance companies don't see speech therapy for children, even if they have something like apraxia, which is a really severe motor speech disorder, they see that as developmental because the child never learned the skill to talk. Mm. And for that to me is unfortunate for a lot of our families.
Right. And I don't know if where that breakdown is happening, the people who are deciding those rules, do they really have a good understanding of what apraxia speech is and what the research says as far as when provided with intervention, you know, what the costs and benefits are. Like, if you don't provide services now, what does that mean for the child later on? What's the cost of not providing services? I don't see that being, you know, thought about in the eyes of the insurance company.
Well, I think it's hard too, because for diagnosis, like the DSM, you know, has diagnosis codes that most of the speech diagnosis codes are developmental speech delay, or I can't think of it, but like most of them say like developmental speech disorder or delay. And so you're not able to really accurately represent. And there certainly is a developmental speech delay that exists where children are following the developmental trajectory, but they're just doing it later. But there are children who have disordered speech or disordered language and disordered brain function, because language happens in the brain, that aren't getting treatment because the only code that I can put on is developmental speech delay. Right. And the insurance companies see that and say, no, they have to have had an injury in order to pay for it. So there's also that piece too.
Yes.
And I know Asha does a lot of advocacy for, it's called habilitative versus rehabilitative therapy. And I know they have a whole lobbying group that works on lobbying in Washington to talk about habilitative versus rehabilitative services and why habilitative services should be covered for children. So someone out there is working on it.
Right. That's important. And you know, myself, I can speak to that because my two sons, both of them are dyslexic, and I know that now, but I didn't know that when they were, you know, 2-3 years old. Both sons actually had a frenulectomy on day one of life, but because we're in the Kaiser system now, or a particular insurance company's system, and the one son was not birthed in that particular hospital, so none of those records got over there. He was denied speech therapy services. My second son, same issues, because he was born in such a hospital that had the records that he had that frenulectomy, was able to receive speech services because he had that diagnosis. But the delays that they were having, in fact, my first son had worse delays, but he received no services because he didn't have a diagnosis. So, yeah.
Well, and I don't feel like those delays probably had anything to do with the frenectomy, right? Like,
right, exactly.
Were more language disordered issues. And of course, what's hard too is, right, if you're two and not talking, it's really hard to pinpoint what is the reason behind that. And you might not know until your child is in school. You might not know until your child starts to develop language and the speech that they're using is disordered. You know, if they're just not talking, it's very hard to tell why they're not talking. And so that is one reason, like in Colorado, we have early intervention services. So for children from birth to 3 years old, regardless of insurance, they are able to access therapy services as long as they show a delay. That's part of the reason I think that I really am drawn to early intervention, because everyone is kind of covered equally. And it is more complicated, of course, than I knew when I was just doing independent contracting. But it doesn't matter what your insurance company is. It doesn't matter, you know, where the funding is going to come from. Colorado has funding for anyone 0-3 to get services. And so it's such an important time, especially for speech, if you're not talking yet, quote unquote, to get in there and get services so that they can develop language sooner, so that you can start to tease apart what might those reasons be. And so I'm really appreciative of early intervention for that reason. But what's hard is then the child starts talking and you tease out what's wrong. And then they're 3 years old. And now it's like, well, you're going to school, you'll get 30 minutes a week in the classroom with 15 other kids. And your insurance doesn't cover outside of that. So,
right. Yeah, that is, I can again speak to that too, personally, understanding those frustrations, because I didn't know about early intervention when my first son was little. The doctor never mentioned it. I had no idea. And it is, I mean, it's a national program. It's under the IDEA law. This is considered Part C services. Every state can, put their criteria up of who qualifies, but for the most part, 0 to 2, 0 to 3 are going to be covered services. And if they meet a certain percentage of delay, in Colorado, it's 25% delay compared to their peer group. Other states have higher standards, 30%, 35%. But it is definitely throughout the nation. So if you do think that your child has a delay in any of the developmental areas, you know, ask for a referral to Child Find, because like Jenny said, it is so important to get early intervention before they go into school. And you can have that professional guidance to even begin that process in school for an individual education plan. Because like, again, Jenny, you said that they're going to get limited services in school. It's only in school to provide access to their education. And that is the sole purpose of school-based therapy, which is good, but sometimes not enough.
Yeah.
That frustrates me.
And that's a good point. I forgot people outside of Colorado will hear this as well.
Yeah.
National.
No problem. I got you covered. Well, that's a whole nother ball of wax. And what, again, the system is complicated. It's complicated to access. And it's so important for you guys at Spark that you guys are providing a service that is just beyond, so valuable to patients, that you have that support and that you guys go that extra step to help them find those resources, because other companies may just say, nope, we don't have that service, sorry. And again, the families are out there lost and don't have the ability to navigate this very stressful system. Hours on the phone with Medicaid waiting for somebody to even just talk to. And then all of these terms, I mean, we're using a lot of jargon here today in this discussion, which to you and I is just commonplace language, but to parents, conditions of participation and, medical necessity, these are terms that really don't mean anything to the parents. They just want to get their kid the services they need. So yay for Spark for being able to do that. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, we're really hopeful that we can, continue to keep that mission as we grow. It's definitely something that we talk about every day and every week as a management team and as a administrative team, how as we're growing, we can keep maintaining that. So, and it's also great to have therapists like yourself who are out there, doing the groundwork and conveying needs to the office and, also being that connection between what we're doing and why, and then, actually carrying out the services. So.
Right. Yes. I'm happy to be part of that team. The last question I have for you is about your self-care. I mean, you are wearing so many hats, from a personal level of mom, wife, to professional level, as you have patients on caseload, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. So from a therapist, from an administrator, I mean, I have no idea how you do all of that. What self-care actions are you taking to keep it all flowing?
Yeah, I think, on the last couple of years, I've been a lot on autopilot, and just, I have a really supportive husband who, has really stepped in to be able to, be that kind of connection between our daughter and home and school and, all of her extracurricular activities and, making sure we have food at the end of the day. So that's been really helpful for me to kind of not have to have that hat on. I've just in the last few months have kind of felt like, oh, I can take a breath and I can start to think about self-care type things again. And so I listen to a ton of podcasts. I because I am still seeing kids, I'm out on the road a lot. And so I just find a lot of, you know, silly podcasts, and really enjoy listening to podcasts with stories, and I don't know, I listen to a lot of them. And then just doing yoga at home, and trying to take, you know, just more time. Like if I need to take a shower, it's a long shower. And if I, you know, pretty much just that: showering, podcasts, and yoga.
The trifecta of self-care.
That's right.
Well, what I hear from that is that you, you know, you understand that you have a limited time frame for these things. You acknowledge that you do need some sort of release and taking care of yourself. And you, I think it's great that you found the silly podcasts and the stories that you can kind of get engaged in and use a release in that, because that's completely accessible to lots of people. So the great suggestion there with just kind of silly little lighthearted things to listen to. The yoga at home, wonderful that you are committed to that and that you do that. I could also do something at home and often choose to do other things. So kudos to you for making
that. I mean, yeah, I don't know how committed I am. It's something I I try to do weekly often, but I don't know how committed I am, but I definitely want to try to do it more. So,
okay. Well, you put it out there for the world to hear, Jenny. So now you're committed. And long showers, everybody can take a long shower. Yes. So, and that's a wonderful time to think and come up with new ideas. Just to have that, I think it's a quiet time. So it's some silence.
Yeah.
Where you can drown out the everybody else's needs and focus on what's in your head. So wonderful. Well, anything else you'd like to?
It's kind of funny too when I'm. I was just gonna say when I'm in the shower, I often it's weird, but like I have like a lot of gratitude when I'm in the shower because I'm like, you know, I have hot water running over my body and I have clean hair and my hot water lasts for a while and our water is clean. And I just, you know, I don't know. Whenever I'm in the shower for like, if I'm taking a long hot shower, I'll be like, this is kind of amazing that we even have access to this. And like in so many ways, right? That we have clean water that we can use and that we have hot water and that I am in a house that I own and that we are living in a place where we have access to water without having to worry about it at all. So in a weird way, I kind of reflect on how lucky I really am when I'm able to take a long shower. So I think that's part of it too, that keeps me grounded.
Yes.
A little bit.
Yeah. It's so important. And it's becoming more of a popular thing to talk about gratitude over the last few years, gratitude, kindness, but it isn't a popular trend. It needs to be something that we embrace all the time and being thankful and being mindful of all those things that you could totally take for granted. You could totally just be like, this is nothing special, but you're absolutely right. There are millions of people throughout the world who do not have clean drinking water. And whatever your circumstances are, you're out there, you can find something that you can be grateful for today. And so important, because if your mind is thinking about gratitude, you won't be thinking about like, oh, woe is me, or self-pity. Like you can't have both going on at the same time. You need to be growing or you are running away from something. So you have either choice. So I'm glad that you are choosing gratitude and growth.
Yeah.
Yeah, super, super important and great message. Every morning, my son and I begin our day with meditation and 2 to 3 minutes of gratitude as well. So
I love that.
Yeah, it definitely has helped him a lot with some anxiety, because nothing was really helping him in the moment to kind of to come down from a lot of stress and anxiety. But doing this daily meditation practice has overall brought him down and off, always being on edge. So and just being grateful. And even if you can't think about something that you're grateful for yourself, because sometimes that's hard if you're going through a hard time right now with your sick kiddo or with something going on with you personally, you can start with looking for gratitude and joy outside of yourself. And that's a little bit easier to recognize. And then as you get better, if you know, practice makes perfect, or makes better, as you start to feel more comfortable recognizing joy and gratitude from outside of yourself, you can start looking like you are doing, Jenny, what you're grateful for you and your family. So, is there anything else you'd like to share with our audience today?
I don't think so, not that I can think of.
Well, it was great talking with you, and I'm very grateful to have this opportunity to speak with my employer this way. It was a really unique experience for me. So thank you so much for offering your time today with me.
Yeah, and thank you also for this opportunity. I think this was a really fun conversation, so I appreciate it.
All right. Well, we'll get back to work now, Jenny, and go do your yoga.
and take a long hot shower.
Yes. That actually sounds like a really good thing to do today. And we'll chat soon.
Okay. Talk to you later.
Bye.
I wanted to tell you all about a volunteer organization that I started about 6 weeks ago. It's called Nightlight Inpatient Parent Support, and it is a phone hotline for parents who are in the hospital with their kiddos, either after a surgery or maybe in the NICU or just with an illness. And parents who are staying in the hospital with their kids feel alone. They feel like it is such a dark time. There really isn't anybody that they can talk to. Even other parents who are in the hospital at the same time with them really just keep to themselves because everybody's dealing with so much. But all these parents want is connection. So I started, with the help of Kristen Parsons, a volunteer organization, and we are looking for volunteers. We are also looking for donations. Right now, we're not a 501(c) nonprofit. We're just doing this kind of on our own right now. But one of the ways that I'm going to get donations is via this podcast. So I want as many listeners as I can get on this podcast. So let me know what information you want to hear about healthcare advocacy. Please share this podcast out on social media. You'll be doing myself and families a big favor to get this into hospitals across the nation. So again, Nightlight Inpatient Parent Support. We're looking for volunteers to be part of our phone bank. If you need some support, you can definitely reach out to me, and I'll have the link to the phone number for the phone bank. Thank you.
Hey there, it's Christine from the Healthcare Advocacy Podcast. Would you like to be featured on this podcast and share your healthcare advocacy story? Then sign up on the Sign Up Genius link under the description of this podcast, and we'll talk soon.